his dark skin deeply creased and covered in hideous black moles. His blind eyes were covered by large black lens glasses. He did not smile. This man was Omar El-Khayyab.
"We're going to land soon," said Atta.
He reached his hand across the aisle and patted the back of El-Khayyab's hand.
"I'm told there will be a crowd."
El-Khayyab took his right hand and moved it on top of his brother's hand, gently patting it, but he said nothing.
"It's been a long flight, Omar," said Atta.
"Tell me, Atta, will you miss Paris?" said El-Khayyab quietly.
El-Khayyab reached up and removed his glasses. Beneath, the sight was grotesque. The eyeballs were balls of murky green and rolled around in the sockets like fish eyes. The skin around both sockets was badly scarred despite the more than 60 years since the accident, the fire that had destroyed Omar El-Khayyab's vision forever.
"Yes, I will," said Atta, looking away from his brother's face and trying to smile.
"I'll miss the food, but I'm happy to go, Imam."
"I'm glad to hear it.
Will you miss Paris, Omar?"
"No."
He reached his hand up and stroked his white beard.
"The French are a vile filth.
But I will miss the madrasa.
I will miss the boys. I will miss the moment."
"The moment?"
"There is a moment when it happens," said El-Khayyab.
"When the education of a young boy truly begins."
"What do you mean?" "There is a moment when a boy accepts jihad for the first time. When Allah turns a young boy's blood into an angry fever. I cannot see it in their eyes, of course, but I've learned to recognize it in their voices. Once it happens, there is nothing that can bring them back. It's unstoppable. That moment, for me, is like nirvana. That is what I will miss the most."
The plane arced left as the rumble of the landing gear being lowered could be heard.
"But instead of a few hundred boys, brother, you now have a nation of more than 200 million, said Atta.
"You have been elected president of Pakistan."
A smile creased El-Khayyab's lips. He nodded his head up and down while stroking his beard.
"Yes," said El-Khayyab calmly. "Allah works in wondrous ways, does he not?"
Chapter 1. Hardwick's Cafe and Bistro, Jameson Center, Macquarie, Australia. Josiah Glynn walked briskly through the air-conditioned suburban mall, calmly surveying the shops, restaurants, and people. Jameson Center was a dump. Out of the way, tired, lousy, lower-middle-class shops, half-empty, badly lit restaurants. The only people he saw ambling about the musty-smelling, windowless mall were blue hairs, too old to remember what good food tasted like. That was the point, though. Out of the way. Glynn felt a patch of cold sweat beneath his armpits, but less than he had anticipated. Certainly less than he had envisioned when he got dressed that morning. Despite his precautions, or perhaps because of them, he was nervous. He breathed deeply. He was 15 minutes late, but that was intentional. "These fuckers can wait," he whispered to himself as he ambled casually past a shoe store. Glynn knew it was false bravado, but he needed the bravado, the confidence, to get him through the next 10 minutes. The drive to Jameson Center from the Customs and Border Protection Service had taken 3 hours. If he'd driven straight there, it should have taken 15 minutes. But Glynn had taken a slow, circuitous, out-of-the-way route through the far-flung suburbs of Canberra. A random route. The entire drive, he'd kept one eye glued to the rearview mirror, looking for anyone who might be following him. As far as he could tell, no one was. Glynn's job was to oversee quality assurance for Australia's Customs and Border Protection Service's e-commerce site, where Australian citizens could apply online for passport renewals. Glynn tested the servers and databases, running various checks on the site to get rid of bugs, broken links, algorithmic anomalies, and other malfunctioning lines of code. Because he spent all of his working hours in the bowels of the customs databases and IT infrastructure, Glynn also had access to any and all information about